Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We got the new swag out. My friends at Strategic Factory, Keith Miller making that happen. My cat loves the little tassels here. We're going to have to get some replacements here pretty soon. Our friends at Taharka are shipping this ice cream, and I'm going to make this quick because, you know, I would really hate to rub in the fact that I still have some pumpkin spice latte left in my freezer. I also have some caramel apple crisp, and when we had the Taharka folks this week, they're employee-owned, and they had this wonderful video. Vinny, who's my buddy over there, says that people are very, very upset with him when he runs out of sweet potato crumble. And I have some remnants here on the video cam. You'll see I missed a few pieces here. But listen, 8 of these come to your door. It's one click away, $15.70 off, just $40.30 when you use the code BALTIMOREPOSITIVE. Put it in, check it out. Have it delivered. Make your selections. There's 28 to choose from. And you know what? I'm going to promote State Fair. We'll promote El Guapo. Our friends at Fadley's delivering crab cakes. But I want to give some holiday love to Pizza John's because it is the most wonderful time of the year. Don, do you know that if you buy gift cards at Pizza John's, you get extra value? They don't discount at Pizza John's ever. There's no coupon. They've never had a coupon. They've never done any sort of thing. But at the holidays, if you buy the gift cards, that's how you get yourself a little extra 20% off the edge for next year. And I know our next guest has a Pizza John's Essex affiliation. She has an affiliation to my parents, and she doesn't even know it on my 29th anniversary. Don, you do the honors. How about that?
Well, I guarantee you that our next guest has been to Pizza John's more than once.
Where did we launch Baltimore Positive, Don Mulder? Where did we launch
it? We launched it almost 2 years ago with Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger at the one and only Pizza John's. It is a pleasure to welcome back really one of our regulars at Baltimore Positive, the president of MSEA. Whew, you talk about being in the spotlight over the past year or so. We welcome back President Cheryl Bowe. Cheryl, welcome. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you for having me back. And Pizza John's. Wow. Love it.
Yeah. Now, and then listen, they're curbside and you can order ahead. I do it myself. full disclosure, my wife's away this week for the holidays with her family. So I'm rubbing it in by getting anything I want on a pizza. I don't have to worry. I can get the pineapple. I can do whatever I want. You know, I get extra green peppers this week. So I'm going to be curbside and down there. And I, you know, we want everyone to be doing that. You know, you have a connection. Dom was making me cry earlier in the week. It's my 29th anniversary on the radio this week. So we did a big segment about background and whatnot. And I guess I didn't know you or of you 2 years ago. Now you're on TV and all this, but the Essex part of my parents' background, Mount Carmel married, first home in Mars Estates. They call it Joe's and Hands Corner. Did anybody ever call it that when you were down there?
I never heard that. I was there for over 14 years. I call it home. I came straight from Pittsburgh to Mars Estates in Essex.
That is an upgrade. And my dad came from Scranton, so I'll tell you.
I have to tell you, I was there at Pizza John's Saturday night for curbside pickup, but I like the cheesesteak and french fries.
Do you get gravy?
I do not get gravy, but listen, their fries are really
listen,
good.
you burgers, all right? And I'll get to that in a couple of minutes. We're on the short end of the COVID stick 2 weeks ago, so I got to be nice to you with football right now, you know, even though I watched that Bills effort last week. But the Pittsburgh thing is Yin's put the sandwich with the potatoes inside of it. The way we do it in East Baltimore, and honestly, Andy over at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog says his family invented this, honestly, that they put gravy on the french fries. And when I get Andy on, he'll tell you that this started 100 years ago on the east side on the docks. But gravy on the french fries is something that east side knows about that. Nobody does it better than Pizza John's, I'll tell you.
My french fries have to go on my salad or in my sandwich. It's a thing.
That must be
weird.
That is a Pittsburgh thing. In county government, Nestor, we did refer to that area as Joe's and Hands Corner, right down there, right in the
correct,
central part
right where Salvo Auto Parts and the Thunderbird, the whole deal. So, but it's a pleasure to have you back on, and we're going to go a million directions in all this, but you really have become too famous for all of us on TV. Well, everybody's coming to you too often, right? This is a tough time for teachers, for students, for everyone, much more so than a year and a half ago. We thought it was just tough getting Gerwin done, right?
It is a tough time. And our educators, man, they are stepping up in ways that we haven't before. But we could always count on all of our educators, our food service employees, our teachers, but never too famous, but always trying to get the educator voice at the decision-making table. That is very important to our educators.
Obviously, obviously my entire life, you know, I've had a passion for education. Having been a teacher, I have respect for teachers, family members, lifelong teachers, daughter who's a principal, go down the list, sister-in-law, teacher. I mean, it's just the connections are amazing. Cousins that are teachers, but I've never seen, I don't think this is hyperbole, Cheryl. Maybe you can just tell some of the stories, because I've never seen anything to compare with what our teachers have had to do since March, and shifting all of the time, having plan A changes, having plan B changes, having plan C, that changes. And yet through it all, they remain focused on their kids, trying to make sure that it's not a lot. Someone posted, and I'm going to shut up and let you talk a little bit about teachers and what they're doing, but someone posted, and obviously I love Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden. Yes, Tucker, it's Dr. Jill Biden, you nitwit. So I love Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden, but I do agree with some folks who had posted on social media that time, it's not the end of the world, but time probably whiffed this year, that the cover should have been the people of the year, and it should have been the frontline workers, including teachers, the healthcare workers, because never in the history of the United States have I seen anything like this. So Cheryl, share some stories from the front lines that come through you, because I am in awe.
So you're right. Our educators, just like all of our hospital workers and everyone else, are really keeping things going. And, you know, when we left school March 13th, everybody thought, oh, it's going to be a week or two and we're going to get back in. And now we're still how many months later and we're not back in our classrooms. And as you said, teachers especially like some consistency. We want to be able to be the masters of our content and everything and some consistency. And they've changed on a dime. I have educators who are teaching virtually using devices that they just picked up, especially here in Baltimore County with the ransomware attack. They're switching out their computers. They've lost all of their historical files and lessons, and that's gone. In Dorchester County, I have teachers who don't have connectivity, and they're just trying to teach out of their cars as they're sitting next to the school, and their students are learning, their own children are learning in the back seat. Our cafeteria workers, they served over, I think, 8 million meals to our students and their families. But you're right, Dawn. It just keeps changing. And you know, one day you're going to teach virtually, then you hear 2 weeks later, you might be in person, you might not be in person, and what will that look like? But they have stepped up to the plate, and they're taking care of their own children, their family members, worried about coronavirus, some economic instability. And they're still going to school each day and trying to connect with students. And it's just amazing. And, you know, NEA and the National Education Association and the National PTA just recently did a survey of students. It was released yesterday. And 88% of the students that were surveyed said they trust their teachers and they know their teachers are doing everything they can to get them their education.
I've seen it up close and personal. And you know, I've watched because I've kept an eye on what my grandchildren are doing. And it just seems to me that it's not perfect. It's a real challenge. Teachers at their core, and you were an elementary teacher, Cheryl, teachers want to be able to hug their kids. They want to be able to wish them a good day and have a great weekend. And everybody's been deprived of that sort of tactile part of what's so important, but it has been remarkable. And then this week, this is sort of tangential to all this. There's another story, and Nestor, I don't know if you saw this, that in Howard County, a couple of disgruntled parents now are going to court to take away voting rights from the student member on the Board of Education because they don't like the way the student is voting on the Board of Education, trying to represent the interest of students, and in many cases, that student member represents the interest of teachers. Cheryl, I don't know what to make of all of this. Are you familiar with that case?
I am familiar with that, and I just, you know, saw recently that our student members in Baltimore County stood up and said we need new board leadership. Our students are the voices of what we're seeing, and we're going to be able to come out of this pandemic. But there's so many people who don't have a direct tie to education. When I say like the inner workings of everything that's happening, and they just want to dictate without listening to our students, without listening to our educators. I mean, I was disappointed in many of the parents in Howard County who just went against any type of real integration of our schools. I mean, we're in 2020, 2021. We're still fighting against the integration of our schools and the distribution of poverty. And it's just, I think people are becoming very selfish. And I think it's the political climate that has been created. And so I'm excited for January 20th and the inauguration. And maybe we can get some civility and unity back into education and our country as a whole.
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned that, because Nestor has talked a lot about January 20th, particularly as it relates to the Department of Education. He mentions it almost every show and talks about a post-DeVos period back at the Department of Education, really having to rebuild it because she's decimated the agency. But for folks who might not understand, talk about why a Secretary of Education matters and is more than just a name on a masthead.
So until Betsy DeVos came in, I'll bet you most of the public didn't even know who the Secretary of Education was. And I mean, it just shows how horrible she's been for education, trying to roll back anti-discrimination laws, especially in our higher education. You know, just basically saying it's okay to discriminate. It's okay to have abuse and not go, you know, before a board when you're caught or you're accused. Loans, not trying to forgive, have loan forgiveness, especially in colleges that are fly-by-night places that took students' money and didn't deliver on the education.
Like Trump University.
Yes, Trump University, and there were others. And she has really tried to dismantle public education, giving more money to for-profit charter schools, giving more money to private and parochial schools than public education. Even here in Maryland, trying to give grants to foster more towards the private schools than public education. And it just really has tried to eat away at the fabric of our public schools, which is the level, trying to give a level playing field to everyone. It's trying to be the equalizer. When at a time, we see so many racial injustices across our country, and a lot of that starts with our education. What type of curriculum are we teaching our students? Are we taking the time to let them see their school counselors, their psychologists, and their social workers working with the family? So she's really trying to dismantle public education. So she can't go soon enough for educators across this country. And we are excited at some of the prospects that the Biden-Harris administration are considering to replace her at the department. In her final words, I know it was reported that she asked the people that were there to hold up the resistance to the Biden-Harris administration. Well, I don't think there's too many people there. And the resistance is against our kids. So what does that tell you from an outgoing secretary?
Yeah, it's a strange use of language, right? Someone that I well respected once said to me, you know, unfortunately, Don, words are all that we have. So choose them carefully. And talk about the resistance. And you're right. Resistance to what? I mean, it's really horrifying. And Cheryl, I think tied into all of this, I think we've chatted about it before, is what I hear, the real fear that I hear from educators, and actually, I should put in a plug before I talk about my fear. Nestor and I have a horse in this race. We're rooting. We'd hate to lose her in the city, but we're rooting for our good friend in Baltimore, positive alum, Dr. Sanya Sonalesis, as Secretary of Education. We think she'd be a great choice, and you talk about a contrast to Betsy DeVos. So, Biden team, if you're listening, Dr. Sanya Sonalesis, she's our choice. But Cheryl, I hear over and over, and certainly Dr. Sonalesis has talked about this, really concerned that this educational divide is really being exacerbated over this past year between the haves and the have-nots. And we always struggle with that. But, boy, it seems like that's really front and center now. And we're really going to have to do some work on the back end of this. What is MSEA's involvement in that issue and trying to bring attention to it?
Well, Don, you and I both are longtime educators, and we know that this is not new, seeing this divide. And it has intensified, and it's been exacerbated, but it's risen to the top. When I was at Mars Estates Elementary School, we were still providing school meals outside, summer programs. But it's just really been, the divide has gotten deeper and wider for our students. And we are working hard to override the blueprint for Maryland's future. This is really the long-term investment in for our students and schools here in Maryland. It will provide additional funding for the schools that are servicing students in concentrated poverty. It will provide community schools, because we know it's not just the student that needs support, it's the whole family and the whole community that needs support. Expanding pre-K, offering more career technology education opportunities. It shouldn't depend on your zip code whether you have these opportunities. It should be afforded to everyone. And we've seen this divide disproportionately impacts negatively our Black and Brown students. So it continues the racial divide and all that goes along with equity. So the blueprint veto override is our top priority as MSEA and our educators throughout the state. And that then is tied to the Built to Learn Act that the governor also vetoed. You know, we talk about during COVID, we need to talk about ventilation. Whether our classrooms have, you know, water and hand sanitizer, but just all of the physical plant items. We have dilapidated buildings and throughout the state, and the governor vetoed the Built to Learn Act as well, which would invest in our schools. So as Marylanders, we can't ignore the funding needs of our schools anymore. This pandemic shared and showed that to us. And this is part of the reason why we can't get back into our schools, is because we don't have the funding that we need to provide the education for all of our students. So she is right in that divide. And I'm just proud that we have several people being considered for the Secretary of Education here in Maryland. We also have Freeman Nebraska. We have others. So we are really cultivating education leaders here in Maryland, which is
the awesome. Doctor, another alum around here. I got to break out my UMBC gear here.
Been with us several times. You talk about two people that we love at the head of the class, Dr. Freeman Rabaski and Dr. Sonia Santelises. They're two of our all-time favorites. Nestor, I know that when Cheryl talks about Kerwin, it right away just gets you going.
Well,
understood from the beginning what's in it for a governor to fight educational funding.
Yeah, I would say, you know, through all of this, no matter where you sit on the spectrum of centrist or left or right, understanding that better people and better kids, that is the prime investment we have to make as citizens. I mean, I funded in Baltimore City. I live here. I don't have kids. I don't have grandkids, but I understand how important this is when it comes time for hiring, for growing the economy, for every aspect of this. And the thing that concerns me, the ransomware, I want to go back to that because I made a whole list here, Cheryl, because I was well taught by Don Mohler. You know, I keep good notes, copious notes. I got four colors here, if you can see, you know. So
that's
this,
awesome.
This old school is how I learn, you know, when I do take notes. The ransomware thing, run me through that, because I dated teachers. I know teachers. I had a roommate who was a teacher for a long time. I watched him grade papers and lesson plans and taking bags of stuff to the beach and like all of that, right? I can't imagine that if you have lesson plans that live on, you know, in a Google Doc world somewhere. Look, I have hard drives everywhere. Like they're 5 feet away. This is the last few years. I keep them. I back everything up because I don't want to lose my life online. I'm freaky like that. But I can't imagine if you're a teacher and everything goes down. If what happened that day? Run me through that from what you're hearing from students and teachers and parents during ransomware.
So the uncertainty of what happened was just as concerning as what happened, because still to this day, many of our educators don't know what all has been infected. and they're not getting information from the school system. So, you know, teachers woke up that morning and they wanted to deliver education. And even our association, TABCO, tried to get out messages that said, do not open anything. Do not open up your device. Don't get on your email. Don't do anything. And so that's scary because this is the only way we have to connect to the world right now is through our devices and connecting with our students. So those messages started going out. And then they didn't know what all, again, was infected. What am I going to get paid? What lessons do I have? Now, educators, as everybody in every business, we're told, back up your items, back up your items. Well, we don't all do that all the time. It's a habit that we have. And so if you didn't have things backed up and they were on your device and your device was infected, it's gone. I know a friend of mine, 20 years of all of her stuff that she has worked to put into her device so she could go virtual to teach, she said it is gone. And, you know, our educators,
we've all lost data, right? I mean, we've all, you know, at some point, we know what that feels like, right? So that's devastating, literally, right?
It is devastating because then it was also connected to some of their personal devices. And so they were wondering if they were going to lose the laptop that they spend hundreds of dollars on or their phone that they spent on, because this is a 24-hour job. We do it all weekend when we might get a message from a student or a parent. So it's easy to say, oh, you should just use your work device, but that's not the reality of teaching. I mean, we go to students' football games, we go to their soccer games, we go to birthday parties. It is a contact and personal job. And so a lot of things were missing, and all of that to wake up and not know what was going to happen. I will have to say, though, when I look at social media, there are so many teachers who are saying, I didn't lose mine. Here's my email. Contact me and I'll give you all my lesson plans. They are helping each other to really, you know, get through this. But that was more upheaval and trauma on top of a pandemic and everything else that's happening.
Sure, oh, no, I'll go one by one here through everything you talked about. Wi-Fi and teachers out on the end of a farm trying to teach because they don't have Wi-Fi in their home. And, you know, my wife's in the business of delivering such Wi-Fi professionally. And, you know, I saw Zeke and some other people here in the city. Brandon's been on that as well. And I'm sure they all have been on it. I'm just top of mining it. That the Comcast and the Verizons and the distributors, that this is, you know, we talk about Mars Estates and why my dad wound up in Essex. My dad wound up in Essex in 1943 to make planes for the war, right? And it feels to me like if we had a real president over the last year, we're talking about PPP and what we need for doctors, taking care of teachers and taking care of students and making sure that kids have a device and the ability to learn and teachers have a device and the ability to teach in the modern world, this isn't too much to ask for systems that are already built. And, you know, and patriotism aside, citizenship, civics, whatever the greater good would be, that we wake up every day and can teach our kids, everything else should be stopping right short of feeding them, right?
Right. These aren't luxury items anymore. You can't do anything even to try to get your driver's license these days without using the computer. And Wi-Fi, you know, just a little part of this, nobody gets reimbursed or a stipend or anything for Wi-Fi. So all of our educators went home and were expected to have their own Wi-Fi that they're paying for out of their pocket. And so,
by the way, it's not just Wi-Fi. It's Wi-Fi where you can like video, right? You know what I mean? It's it's not just, you know, you've got mail, you know, it's literally, I have to do this for what I do, you know, and if I stream it at a higher baud rate and in HD, I mean, everybody does it differently all day long. And I think we just take it for granted that everybody turns on their computer because most of us in computer land do. There are a lot of people, a lot of challenges, and it's not black or white or east or west or left or right or red or blue. It's from Ocean City to Cumberland, literally, right?
It absolutely is. And it's whether you have three kids at home and you're all trying to use the Wi-Fi. Some of my colleagues never turn their videos on only because if they do, their kids get dropped off of their classes.
I have that with Luke Jones. Anybody here at WNST, Luke lives in Shrewsbury. Luke lives around the corner from a barn, from a farm and a ball field over the hill by the tracks, right? And when it rains, his phone doesn't work. and he's trying to like do video with me. If his brother gets on, we get thrown off. So, I mean, his brother cannot have meetings when we're talking about Lamar Jackson. So I literally have it in my own little circle, and it's not because, we're financially challenged. It's because he lives where he lives, literally, right? And he That's was a right. school teacher. So, he was a fifth grade teacher. So I can only imagine the challenge of all of that for everyone.
It is. And my friend who teaches second grade, she said while she's teaching, she's also doing tech support on her phone because the parents will say, well, Johnny's trying to do that lesson, but he can't get in. And so she's doing both at the same time because this is all new territory. Not only is it not accessible to many, but it's a whole new territory. It's not opening up your iPad and going to Google or streaming something. This is actually learning and teaching on electronic platforms. It takes more bandwidth, takes some learning, and it takes a partnership with our parents to do this. And so everybody's in.
Okay, can I ask you, where's the think tank on this? And I'm going to give Don some love here, okay? Because everybody knows I love Uncle Don, right? Don's not just an educator, but has been professionally trained, I think by Al Saunders or John Buren back in 1988 when we tried out for the sports guy to, like, work a camera a little bit and talk to the kids and be engaging and, all the things that you could be in a classroom with children to keep them all day, every day, in the way that I have to keep people 30 years in listening to me when they're in the car and they have 1,000 other things they could listen to, right? But then there are other teachers that I remember were very robotic and very, it put me to sleep, Mr. Sullivan, in math class. And then I'm thinking how that would translate into a camera. What's that been like over the last 7 months to turn every teacher into a teleteacher and to work on, and I'm going to be mean here, and Don knows what I'm talking about. I do this professionally all day. When people don't have a professional microphone and they're trying to teach and it sounds like they're off the mic, like all day long, I can't imagine a 7-year-old staying. My wife does yoga, right? In here with a woman who does it for 100,000 people. I have yoga teachers that I want to give $15 to and go to their class, but their microphone's so horrible when they're doing yoga that I can't stay with it. I think there's something about audio, video, camera. I mean, we talk about Room Raider and like all of that, but for every teacher to keep full engagement, it's a skill set, Cheryl. You know what I mean? Not every guest comes on and speaks into the mic the way they need to for it to sound good, especially when it's an hour, two, or five. Where's the training to make every teacher a TV star? Because that's what's going to be. That's going to be necessary.
That's a good question. And the where and the when, we're past that. So our educators did not have that training. They're learning it as they go. Just think of many of the educators did not have any of the training on the platforms. And so they're learning it. Their students are often teaching them how to use the platforms. And that technology is not provided by our school systems. It's a, you get a device. That's what you get. And now the new Chromebooks that are coming out because the demand is so high, that device doesn't even allow you to use it instructionally as many of our educators want to. They're just saying how they're not sophisticated enough so that they can even teach. But, Nestor, you said something earlier, or maybe Don, about we want to be with our kids. What I hear many of my high school friends, the kids don't turn their cameras on. And there's many reasons why kids don't turn their cameras on. Maybe it's a bad hair day, but maybe there's 5 people in their room that they don't want everybody to see that they're
sharing. I never turn my camera on in a press conference with the Ravens. And I'm on, after every game, I just don't turn my camera on when I'm in the big class. I'm on all day, but like I can imagine that, it's 10:30 in the morning and I'm in English class. Why do you need to see what I'm wearing today? Right.
Right. But it's just so hard because we get energy from our kids. We can tell what you're learning by your face, by your mannerisms and everything. Did you get that or you didn't get that? And it is just so hard for teachers to teach to a screen of just squares. And so it's just what I'm saying is it adds to not only the technology, but the interaction. I mean, we love to interact. We're all interacting with each other and looking at each other, laughing. But when you don't have that, it's hard to just say, okay, I'm going to teach and I'm not going to
see especially
anybody.
If you've never met the teacher.
Oh, and this year, that's absolutely what's happened. They started the year right. Virtually. You know, they don't know who John Sloan is sitting there because they never saw John Sloan sitting there.
You know, Cheryl, that you make such an important point. If I've heard my daughter say once, I've heard her say 100 times, Dad, what I really miss are just the smiles on the kids' faces, the walking up and down the hall, having the kids come up and tell me about the, you are so right that as educators, we are wired. We get our juice from that interaction. That's why it's been such an
By the way,
idea.
I can confirm that with Mueller because he was one of my teachers. And
yeah, I mean,
will,
that's where we
I will say the one thing you brought to that school every day was sort of this youthful energy, and we're here and we're going to get things done. And that is, if that's not coming from mom and dad in a natural way, and I know it, not everybody's equipped for that at this point, I don't know where they're getting it from, you know?
And that came, Nestor, again, take the, that, you know, there were certainly days, and Cheryl knows this as well as anybody, but there are days when you're tired when you get up, or you've had a late night, or Cheryl goes to bed all depressed because her Steelers wet the bed again, and she can't get to sleep, you know, and you drag yourself
embarrassing
in
you lost to them wearing those red pajamas they were wearing.
and she'll get back at us. But you go in, and then you see the kids, and Cheryl knows this, and then it's like someone turned a light bulb on again. Then your electricity is back on. And Cheryl, connected to this, I should know the answer to this question, and I don't. And I actually feel stupid for not knowing the answer. But it seems to me, I don't know if the state has done this or not, curious about your take, that this is a year where we should have a moratorium on accountability testing. And everybody's listening to me knows what I think about accountability. You and I haven't always seen eye to eye on accountability. I mean, people know that know us. I'm an accountability guy. But if ever there was a year to say to teachers and students, guys, we're going to put the brakes on this year, let's just try to get to June and not worry about any of these accountability tests or anything. I don't know the answer to that, Cheryl. What are we doing with that in the state of Maryland?
We're advocating for that very thing. So last year, when COVID sent us home, we were right in the middle of testing for the federal accountability system. And so the secretary did allow for waivers, and luckily Maryland applied for that waiver. But right now that's not happening. So that's another plug for January 20th's inauguration. But testing our students is not helping them learn. And when we all know that. And so we are advocating that those high stakes tests get put on hold. They should really be put on hold indefinitely. We believe they come in and they take so much instructional time away from our students, and they really hurt our students. We've heard teachers say, my kids are crying just trying to take this test because I can't help them. I can help them every other day, or just give them a little, you know, hey, did you look here? Did you look there? And you can't do that during a test. So we're asking for a waiver from all high stakes standardized testing. What needs to take place is we need to do some diagnostic, teacher-made tests that we can see where our students' deficits are and what we need to do as we're getting through this pandemic. These high-stakes tests don't do that. We're hearing from school systems that they're going to try to bring kids in to test them. Why? What are we proving by doing that except for checking a box that we tested them? So what? Let's get past that. Let's start teaching our kids instead of teaching to a test, and let's start teaching our kids and not just some curriculum that somebody else made. We know this is a human interest profession. We have to get back to that, and this time is telling us that even more. And I just wanted to add, it's not only the students that give us energy, but Don, you know, we learn so much from our colleagues.
Oh, absolutely.
When you're having that rough day with Nestor and you don't know what else to do, you go to your colleagues and you say, I'm having a really rough day. And they may say, yeah, he's just off today and we're trying to do this. Or you might say, well, try this. I can't do that here in a kitchen or in my, you know, my makeshift classroom that many of our teachers are doing. They just aren't getting also that collegiality to try to support students. So there's so much of that interaction that's missing.
I remember being there for me the day the Colts left Baltimore.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
We were together that morning.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Cheryl, when you tell that story about strength from colleagues, it always makes me smile, and I miss her every day. But and you knew her well, but my good buddy that I started with many, many years ago, and she ended up being my social studies department chair at Catonsville High School before she died far too early. Beverly Hickman. The strength from colleagues piece. I always knew as a principal when I had gone a bridge too far, when Bev would come in and she would say, "Don, can we talk for a minute?" And I would immediately laugh because I would say, "Uh-oh, they've called in the cavalry. What did I do now?" Because they know Bev. You've been with him since you guys were 21. Would you go tell him that, you know,
he's out of his mind?
More often than not, he does a good job. But this is
which family little, member should I use in that capacity? Should I use Jeff, crazy. Linda? When you're out of your mind, which person should I use as the buffer?
I used to tell the faculty all the time.
You won't answer that, Cheryl. See that?
No, I'm going to answer it right now. I used to tell the faculty all the time they never had to worry about their voice because every night at dinner, I sat across from their voice, a woman that had been a French teacher for decades, who when I would come up with something, she had no resistance at all to say, come on now. How long has it been since you've been in a classroom? So I got it at home all of the time. So
Jersey style, as I understand it.
A Jersey style. But I want to make that point that Cheryl made. It's what I love about Baltimore Pods. Cheryl and I don't agree on high-stakes testing. MSEA and Cheryl would be at a different place than I am. I don't know that it has to look like it looks in its current format. I think we could all improve it. And my guess is if Cheryl and I had a couple of hours to sit down, we could come up with a model that we would both agree with. But where we do agree, and Nestor, now this is going to become my new passion, going to be talking about it going throughout the year now, is I cannot imagine anyone who thinks it makes sense to put more stress on teachers, parents, and students in this year as we dig our way out, and the relief that those folks would feel just by having the state superintendent say, listen, for this year and this year only, we are not going to do any high stakes testing. And I want folks to hear what Cheryl said, because it's critical. And it does go back again to educational gaps, that in lieu of that, we need to be focusing on real teacher-driven skills assessments to figure out where our kids are as a result of this year, which hasn't been lost, but it hasn't been the way we draw it up either, so that we can begin to fill in those gaps. So I think that is extremely, extremely critical, Cheryl.
Absolutely. And Dawn, I think probably you and I would have more agreement than disagreement, even on the high stakes test, because there is something to making sure all of our students are succeeding. And I know some of the testing was to show that our Black and Brown students were not getting the same education as everyone else. But it's how we use those assessments. And to label schools or label teachers or label kids is not the way to use those assessments or depend on funding for those schools. So I think there's probably more agreement that you and I would have regarding assessments. But as a teacher, I want it to be able to show me how I can teach my students better.
Absolutely.
That's the key to any type of assessment that we do. How can I use this to improve my craft and improve learning for my students? And if it's really for, you know, labels or anything else, then we have issues.
I hear you. Listen, before we let you get out of here and Nestor takes us out of here with a holiday wish. All right, now we got a few games left. Are you worried at all about Big Ben and your boys, or is this just a little December dip and the best is yet to come?
Well, I'm glad that my quarterback doesn't get cramps in the fourth quarter. So we'll just say that, and or whatever that was. But I always stand behind my Steelers. We clinched a playoff bid. We're going to get our act together. It's hard to play three games, and I think it was three or four games in 12 days. You know, we worked together between the Ravens and the Steelers to postpone that game three times. So there was definitely some camaraderie. But there's no question why behind me I have a black, gold, and white kitchen.
Because you wanted it to be ugly. That's what it is. By the way, I mean, throwing Lamar under the bus in regard to drama. Oh, my God. I mean, I've watched Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, the drama around Roethlisberger is insane.
Hey, I'm just saying, you have a Brown wide receiver now. I'm just so happy we don't have our 84 anymore. He's now down in Tampa. I'm hoping that he doesn't bring drama to your team. We need to play sports. We need to have a good camaraderie, a good rivalry. And
I'm only being nice because Mike Tomlin and I exchanged some Thanksgiving Day pleasantries. So I'm going to be nice just to get through all of this. You know what? What's really interesting about the Ravens Steelers things, I think they're going to play again in January. You know, I think it could be set up that they'll play again. I wouldn't be shocked about that. And it'll be up there. It'll be cold. It'll be fun if they play again, full speed, both teams, I think. Cheryl, always a pleasure to visit with you. Keep the teacher safe out there, and we'll keep checking in with you. Keep the message coming.
Thank you. And I just want everybody to give some love to all of our educators. They're working really hard. And I know you all do that, but everyone listening, thank
you. Send them a crab cake from Faithy. Send them some ice cream from Taharka. And by all means, put some gravy on the French fries at Pizza John's. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, I am Nestor Aparicio. Together, we're putting together sports and arts, entertainment, and shopping local. And above and beyond everything, the kids and education. We're talking a lot about that as the year winds down here. Wishing happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to everybody out there. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking, just like the sweatshirt says, Baltimore positive.